Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, GP John Possum, the two-man power trip of wrestling. And of course, joining me is the star of the show, the former WWE and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the 83 weeks of dominance and the NWO, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. How are you, my friend?
I am doing good. It's getting cold again. I don't know what the hell's going on, but we're getting a bit of a cold spell.
Aren't you guys going to get snow or something?
So New York got it. We didn't get any, but they were saying we might get some, which is nuts.
Oh, that's crazy, huh? Spring time here, so I can't complain. I just can't imagine snow this deep into April, but who knows?
Interesting with obviously becoming spring and going into the summer, WWE has a bunch of really big shows going on. They have three stadium shows. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Please tell me about it.
So they have Money in the Bank, which is going to be a stadium show in Las Vegas where SummerSlam was last year. Then they have SummerSlam, which is in a stadium. And then they have a show in the beginning of September in the UK. That's going to be in a stadium. I think it holds 60,000 people, and they're saying that it's almost going to be sold out as soon as they put the tickets on sale. So, really, I mean, it's going to be a big summer for them.
What stadium is that going to be in? It's not Wembley, because Wembley holds right at 100. Where would that be? Would that be in Manchester?
I think it's in Cardiff, Wales. Principality Stadium, it's called.
Okay. I'm not big on English soccer, but I know a few teams. There must be a big team in Wales, huh?
I'm not big on soccer at all, but I would imagine that there must be that big of a stadium. I just like, wow, like they go back to the UK and man, they go back in a huge form. Like, do you think the business is killing enough where they can do three stadium shows kind of in a row?
Think about this. They did two nights with WrestleMania. And what do you think of the attendance was for the two nights?
So Meltzer had said the real number was 65,900 something and 66,000, something like that.
Where does Dave get these numbers?
He claims the box office itself.
So wouldn't there somebody in the box office be a state representative?
Probably. I know WWE says it's for entertainment purposes only, so they can kind of make up whatever number they want. But he always comes back and says, oh, the real number is this.
I'm just wondering how he gets that information if it's a state employee.
Right. I wonder as well. Because remember, he was always big on WrestleMania 3 wasn't 93,000 people. Remember, he's very big on that. Except for the fact that if you actually look at, which is pretty simple, Google it, how much people that the Silverdome holds for a football game. So it was clearly sold out. You can see on every picture, clearly sold out. Then all the seats on the field. So you add 80,000 probably to the 13,000 or so in the field. So I do think it was probably somewhere around 90,000 people. I don't know why he stuck on that it was less, but whatever.
So they drew, we'll say that's 120,000 people, right? Two nights. Something has really ignited them again, don't you think? I'm going to throw something out there. Is it Roman Reigns? I'm asking that question to you.
To me, it seems like every metric and everything points in that direction, yeah.
A long time ago, we were talking about mistakes that are made, common mistakes. All of a sudden, they stopped passing that belt around. They focused on one guy. How long did Bruno have it?
One time he had it for 2,000, then he had it for 1,000.
Yeah. How long did Hogan have it?
Oh, over 1,000, yeah. Yep.
It seems to me that when they focus on one guy, they tend to get stronger.
This is a topic for today. Double J, Jeff Jarrett, when did you first meet or encounter Jeff Jarrett?
I'm almost sure. I mean, I can remember meeting Jeff when I worked the Memphis territory for his father for a period of like 4 months. And I always thought Jeff was a very good piece of talent. He learned from the old school guys. He's a brilliant guy. And, you know, he drew money in both places and was very instrumental during the Monday Night War era, right?
Big time.
Probably one of the most influential guys jumping back and forth.
Yeah, I agree. What did you think about his dad, Jerry Jarrett?
Very smart guy. His father broke away from Nick Gulas. Nick wanted Jerry to use Nick's son, who was horrible, and use him on top, and Jerry wouldn't do it. Nick was an NWA member. Jerry went against the NWA, and the NWA helped him. Me and Mike Graham flew in from Florida, Jack Briscoe and Jerry from Florida, Holly Race. And the only guy, NWA member that I can remember helped Nick was the Sheik. So that's how much pull Jerry Jarrett had. That the NWA actually went against a member.
Wow, damn. And I know that they had split up. Obviously, you more sided with Jerry, right? Obviously, I mean, you weren't a fan of the Gulas and the Gulas territory and what he was trying to do with his son.
Oh, his son was horrible. He was a basketball player that didn't make it. He'd been pampered his whole life, entitled. And he would come into the ring, and Bobby Eaton and him were tag team partners because Bobby was such a great worker. And they were called the Jet Set. And Bobby would sell and give him the tag. And he'd come in and start punching guys that looked like they couldn't break an egg. And he'd say, Daddy said sell. Daddy said sell. You sell or you get fired. Oh, he was an idiot.
With Jerry, and obviously, you know, he had so much success. Do you think that when you're the son of a promoter, like not only a wrestler, but the son of a promoter, do you think that you're almost learning more about not just the wrestling side of the business, but the actual like promotion, business, marketing, that side of things?
Yeah, I think you see it in a different light. The unique place would be Mike's partner, and he saw things not just on the wrestling side. He saw it on his promotion side because his dad was teaching him that end too. I'm sure Jerry was teaching Jeff that.
When Jeff is young and learning the business, it's funny because Eddie Marlin, his grandfather was in the business, his grandmother, Teenie, was in the business as a promoter. I mean, he's got every different aspect of the business like in his blood. It's crazy.
Right, right.
Did you know his grandmother at all?
Yes, Tina, yeah. I worked for her. She ran Lexington and Louisville, and I'm pretty sure Evansville.
What did you think about her? I heard she was a tough nut to crack.
She was a very nice lady. She was very, very good to me. Her and Jimmy Cornette, mother, were dear, dear friends. I think that's when I first met Jimmy, when he was a photographer for them. And she was always super polite lady, but tough, yeah, and had some of the best towns in the territory.
When you're like in the family like that, you almost have to go into the family business? You know what I mean? Like your grandmother, your father, you think you have to go into wrestling?
Let's go back to what you just said. Look at the McMahons, right? But Vince's brother didn't go into the wrestling business. So it's funny. You either have a draw for it or you don't.
Yeah. And obviously Jeff did. I mean, oof. It almost feels like he just inherited so much information. And obviously I think he's a better worker than his dad, but wrestling, just everything, promoting, marketing, because he said, you know, sometimes you'd be at the arena and when he was younger, you know, he'd be selling hot dogs or flyers or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? He's just ingrained in the business. With Jerry, how was he as a promoter, just like payoffs, working for him? How was he to work for?
He absolutely knew his territory. And he had no other TV coming in against him, which was huge. And if you were in the spot that you got money from, you got paid. the thing that I didn't like about the territory, some of the trips were brutal. And other than that, it was a great place for young guys to learn. And if you were a heel, you knew you were going to get a run with Lala. So you're going to make some money for the time you work with Lala. And then they put you in a tag match when your run was through with Lala and you work against Dundee and maybe Eddie Marlin. So, yeah, I enjoyed being there for my time that I was there.
What do you think about him and Jerry Lawler's idea of kind of splitting the baby in half as far as booking? Like, one would book 6 months with the other. You like that idea?
It keeps it fresh, but if a guy's got a hot hand, I don't see why he gives it up right away. I think it should be one of those things where you both decide, well, it's time for you to take it because I'm burnt out, not when you're drawing like crazy. Let it run its course. It's going to get stale after a while.
So when Jeff obviously comes along, he's working in Memphis for his father, USWA, and a little bit of the world-class stuff was going on as well, and he's involved with that. He goes to WWF first. When did you kind of have your eye set on bringing him into WCW?
That was actually an Eric call. And a lot of the guys that have been in around Jeff were big proponents of this. I thought that he'd be in the WWE forever when he went. Because at one time that I had heard rumors that if Vince had ever gotten convicted on the steroid scandal, that Jerry Jarrett was going to take over for Vince.
Right, yes.
So I was figuring Jeff would be there forever.
Very strange. Seems like Jeff and Jerry, now they have a great relationship, but it seemed like a little bit of a rocky relationship was going on throughout the years.
Yeah, and I don't know what caused it, but it happens in most families for a short period, but that was extended time, so I'm glad that they're all back together.
So Jeff Jarrett, when he left the WWF, basically in the latter part of 95, because of some creative problems, because of the whole Double J thing. I don't know if you remember that with the Road Dogg was like the real Double J singing With My Baby Tonight, and
right.
Jarrett had been lip syncing and things like that. So I guess they were going to reveal Brian James to be the real Double J, and they were going to have a feud. And Jeff and Road Dogg both said, I thought that was a little too soon, a little too early, and there were some creative differences. So Jeff just basically was like, all right, I'm done here. And you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to kind of be what I want to be. So in late 96, he ends up basically leaving the WWF. When you hear that, is that, oh, this guy might be not a malcontent, but, oh, this guy's not happy with creative. I hope that doesn't happen here.
No, because I could understand. I thought they had a great idea. And if they thought they could get more out of it, they were probably right. You got to realize they're both second generation. And if they get together, collaborate on something, usually it's going to be very, very good. And maybe they have a better handle on it than you do. So you better listen to what they say. And before you make a decision, that's going to affect them because you know what's going to happen. You got to weigh the pros and cons and pick your fights. I think if they had came to Eric, Eric would have let it continue if he was in that position. Sometimes management just wants to show their power because they have it and don't think things out.
And then on his last exit, I guess the first one time he left was because of the Double J thing. He comes back and they have a little bit of a contract dispute. I guess the money wasn't right. And then he ends up leaving. Does that ever kind of ring true as like an issue with you? Like, uh-oh, if they're saying the money isn't right, does that bother you at all as like a booker and as a guy that's going to promote the guy? Like, uh-oh, he might be not happy with money.
Well, I didn't have anything to do with the money, and I always think talent should get paid. And it's up to management and talent to come up with a fair paycheck. And I believe it basics down to simple as this. It's management and it's labor. And management is going to try to pay labor as cheap as they possibly can because they have to have a plus at the end of the year to continue business. Labor has to have a plus to pay for food, transportation, housing, children going to school, blah, 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 and after wrestling. So I think the guys should get paid what they deserve. And if management says this is what they deserve, good luck to the guys.
I mean, there's other guys that like jumped. Obviously Luger was like the big one at first that jumped, but this was interesting because it's like, okay, they got Luger, and you know, you get a couple other guys, you know, you get, then obviously the two biggies, Hall and Nash, jump. But the Jeff one was interesting because it's like, wow, they didn't really use him right. Let's see how WCW uses him and let's see what's going on. So naturally he initially comes in as this big free agent and they kind of tease that he may be NWO, and he said he's not NWO, and it seems like he's more Four Horsemen. Like when you first brought him in October of 1996, did you have big ideas and big plans for him?
When he came over, Rick was really high on getting him in the Four Horsemen. So I think it was a good move because he was a great performer, and the Horsemen have always were the gears that made the watch turn. Everything else was the diamonds and the bezel, the nice looking hands, and Jeff would fit in there perfectly.
So he does kind of like the Izzy Horseman, is he not Horseman thing. Do you like that storyline? I know we talked about that a little bit before, but did you like the storyline of kind of teasing him in the Horseman? Some members want him in, some don't. Like, how do you think about that creatively?
Well, I look back at it now and think, yeah, we're getting too cute. The Horsemen were an integral part of the Monday night show. Why would they disagree? They were like the Musketeers, all for one and one for all, right? You look back and you say, oh, that was a mistake. If there's a disagreement between the Horsemen, it starts to weaken the Horsemen within, right? You could do it for a short period, then there has to be a reckoning where they have a vote on it. Well, maybe I would vote the other way, but if you guys believe it that strong, I'm going to vote for it to solidify it. I look back and say, mistakes were made, and I'll be the first one to say I probably made a mistake. Weakening the Horsemen was not a good thing, especially at this time, because the NWO being so strong.
We got to lay this one to bed, though. Is Jarrett officially a member of the Horsemen or not?
No. He was just doing that to get heat. He didn't fit with the Four Horsemen.
When he first kind of comes into WCW, like, it does give him kind of a big sense of importance. Like, okay, they got him from WWF. This is a big deal. It wasn't like just some, you know, just run-of-the-mill kind of like mid-card guy. Like, he's upper-card guy for sure. And they even do a little tease where Sting is kind of teasing he's NWO, and Jarrett kind of says his allegiances are with WCW. Like, what about you, Sting? And he kind of takes a shot at Sting during a promo, and then Sting ends up beating him up at one point, which kind of teases Sting being NWO. But I just thought that was good for Jarrett. Like, Sting is the biggest babyface. Having some interaction, even though he got beat up, like, having some interaction with the top star doesn't hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. You see it the way it should be perceived. He's coming out and questioning the guy's loyalty. And even if he gets jumped and beat up, he's in the mix right away.
His first match was against Hugh Morris on 10/7/96 on Nitro. He beat Hugh Morris there. So interesting. A lot of guys getting their first match on Nitro against Hugh Morris.
Yeah, because Hugh was a great performer. There wouldn't be any mistake with Hugh. And you only get one chance to make a first impression. So that's why he was put out there in a lot of situations like that.
And it actually seems like, you know, you're beating somebody, not like some no-name guy. Like, you're beating the veteran. Everybody knows who Hugh Morris was.
Right.
His first big pay-per-view match was at Havoc 96, MGM Grand, of course, Las Vegas. He loses to the Giant by DQ. Match goes about 10 minutes, pretty good, but obviously he was like the fill-in for Ric Flair, who was supposed to be in that match.
Yeah, but it didn't hurt him being against the Giants, and it kind of raised his stature, and he filled in for Rick.
And it kind of started a little mini feud with the Giant, too, which is great because he was NWO at that point.
Right. And it's following the Horseman's NWO storyline by accident.
And the Giant kind of stole the U.S. title. Jarrett's trying to get it back. Pretty funny. Like, if you actually look at some of the names that he beats, it's like, wow, he's beating a lot of old cool guys like Ricky Morton on Nitro, Bobby Eaton on Nitro. It's funny. It's like, wow, I mean, that's like what the great, like, old school names to throw out there on Nitro for Jarrett to get good, easy wins over.
Yeah, and guys that he had worked with 1,000 times. He could dance through. Bobby and Ricky were mainstays in the Memphis territory.
Do you think because he came from WWF, he had like a lot of equity just as far as like being like a, hey, WWF guy?
Yes, absolutely. And it wasn't just that. He could work. Just a terrific worker.
The first really good match that I remember him having was on Nitro against Benoit. It was 11-11-96. Jarrett ends up winning by DQ. But that was one of the things where, like, they're kind of teasing these Horsemen. You know, there's kind of some chicanery going on with McMichael and Deborah and everything else. But it's almost like, okay, you put him in there with Benoit, he can show the world what he can do.
Yeah. And it goes along with the storyline about the crack in the Horsemen.
Yes. Did you ever wrestle Jeff?
No, I don't think I ever did.
Any reason behind that?
No, it's just one of those things. I wrestled every other horseman, but I never wrestled him.
The only thing I could find was World War III, 1996. You guys were in the 60-man battle royal together, but I don't think you ever touched, or I don't think there was any altercation or anything between you guys, so kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Then, also on that night, the Giant and Jeff Jarrett have a rematch, and the Giant gets the big victory over Jeff. So it kind of ends the feud there, but you know, 2 months in a row, you're getting the NWO rub, getting the Horseman rub. I mean, it's kind of got a nice little upper mid-card to main event level kind of feuds going on.
Right. And he's also going against the Giant and holding his own. So it was good for Jeff, I think.
So he's in a U.S. title tournament match. He loses to DDP. But along the way after that, he's getting wins over Rick Steiner and Big Bubba Rogers. And then at Starrcade 96, in a very good match, he defeats Chris Benoit in a no DQ match. Of course, that was in Nashville, Tennessee. That was a great match. That's, I know, that's one of the things, obviously, you're still teasing the Horseman thing, but really, you give him 14, 15 minutes, and he really showed like what he could do. He's a great worker.
Yeah, and that was his home, Nashville. You know, the little suburb outside of Nashville, Hendersonville, where all the country and western stars live. So I'm sure he had everybody in the world coming to root him on.
He then ends up beating Benoit on Nitro, beats Arn Anderson in a very big match on Nitro. Arn and Mongo defeat him and Eddie Guerrero on Nitro. He's had a few matches against Eddie Guerrero where he's the U.S. champion. He fails to get the U.S. title, but it all seems like he's going along at a pretty good pace as far as like who he's wrestling. Nothing where he's getting deep pushed, it seems. It seems to be, you know, floating on that upper mid-card level.
Right.
He, of course, enters in a feud with Mongo, and he wrestled Super Brawl 7. Jarrett gets the victory over him there. Did you like the Mongo feud? Because Deborah was teasing that she basically liked Jeff more than Mongo. Did you kind of enjoy like that feud, or do you think it was, you know, a little close to home, like as far as like Marriage on the Rocks kind of thing?
No, I liked it, except that it kind of exposed Mongo's limited ability. It would have been great if Mongo had a little bit more experience. There were times, I mean, you could see where during their matches, as great as ring general that Jeff is, Mongo would get lost once in a while, especially if he had taken a bump, a big bump.
He's one of those guys where he wasn't that great in the ring, I mean, obviously, but he had so much charisma, and right. He was always so over, and he had so much credibility from being an NFL player and being on the 85 Bears. Forget about it. I mean, that's credibility through the roof. That yeah. It almost didn't matter, but it almost felt like sometimes like clunky.
Yeah, I mean, Mongo credibility really helped the Horsemen too, because they were always talk about athletes outside of wrestling And it would have been great if Mongo had gotten 6 months of training before he came in.
Did Jeff, you think, like working with Mongo?
Yeah, they got along well.
Because, you know, he goes to WBF, and when he's cutting shoot promos, he jokes around like, hey, they had me teaming up and wrestling with a football player, and like kind of taking little shots in character, of course. But it just seemed like he always maybe felt like, this is a, like what the fans are thinking too. Like, eh, it's a little not as smooth as it could be, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I'm sure that those lines were given to him to say too.
So him and Mongo, Jared Mongo, they lose to Public Enemy at Springsteen P97. They lose to Harlem Heat on Nitro, but then they start to get their act together. They beat Harlem Heat on Nitro on 4/14/97. And then Jared basically kind of keeps on rolling quite a bit, has a very good match at Slamboree 97 where he loses to Dean Malenko. Malenko, of course, defended the U.S. title successfully. Jared and Mongo lose to the Steiner brothers on Nitro. Then they lose to Harlem Heat again on Nitro in a rematch. Seemed like a best of three there. Harlem Heat won 2 out of 3. Jared and Flair were teaming up on some of the house shows against Harlem Heat. I mean, that must have been a joy working with Flair, huh? He must have loved that.
Yeah, who wouldn't, right? And they had great matches.
Then on the very big 6/9/1997 Monday Nitro from the Fleet Center in Boston, Mass., Jeff Jarrett defeats Malenko in about 11 minutes to win the U.S. title. Very good match there. What do you think, giving him the U.S. title? Like, was that just a part of the plan? Okay, we're going to give him a bit of a push now?
Yeah. He deserved it. He had some great matches, and he filled in with everybody. He floated along very well.
Do you consider Jeff Jarrett a member of the Four Horsemen?
He would have been if we solidified it the way we should have. But in my head, Jeff needed to be by himself. He didn't need to be the Horseman. Didn't look the way the Horseman should look to me. That's no knock on Jeff. I just think there's a certain quality that the Horsemen have that you either have it or you don't. A character either has it or it doesn't. And I think Jeff being not in that mold was better by being by himself or with the NWO.
Now, Flair and Arn said he's not a Horseman. Got to go with them, right?
Yes. Something about the Horsemen, you see it, you say, that doesn't fit.
Who was a better Four Horsemen, Jeff Jarrett or Paul Roma?
I guess Jeff.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Ole, Tully, Arn, and Rick were the best.
I am kind of impartial to the Barry Windham when you replace Ole with... So... He's kind of on the fringe. Obviously, you're saying a good storyline device to kind of keep the Horsemen relevant and keep them going while there's a lot of big stuff going on with the NWO. So they're kind of teasing Jared in and out of the Horsemen. He's officially kicked out of the group, and he starts feuding with Steve Mongo McMichael. And obviously, like we mentioned, Deborah is involved, but Deborah kind of likes Jeff more than Mongo. It's interesting, and Jeff would end up defeating Mongo at Bash of the Beach 1997 to retain the title. And then even he beat Rick on a couple house shows, which is interesting, I didn't know. Giving him a little bit of a run here with the title.
Right. And I think that was Rick's call to call Rick in and ask him what he wants to do. And he said, let's get him over. So Rick was a big Jared fan too.
So he holds the U.S. title for basically 2 months, and then Clash of the Champions 35. He ends up losing it to Mongo. You think that hurts his stock at all?
Yes, but Mongo had just resigned, and he needed something. This is something you got to take into consideration. You got the North Tower looking over you. You're going to beat them after they signed him another 2 or 3 year deal.
So, like, when you do that, and like he loses, does that like kind of signify, okay, his run's coming to an end? Because in October, basically, he has his last match. Is that kind of signifying like the end of the run there, or that wasn't initially supposed to be the end of the run?
That was not initially supposed to be the end of the run.
Do you think he was unhappy creatively, or do you think that maybe WWF just gave him a better deal this time? Because it's over 97, he heads back.
Yes, I think WWE gave him a better deal, and that we treated him good on TV, so he was a plus going back.
He had a pretty good run over there, but he was IC champ a bunch, never tag team champ, of course, but never world champ. Do you think that kind of bothered him? I mean, he spent 2 years there. He could have been at the top of the mountain. There was some issue with Steve Austin. Austin rather worked with Triple H than worked with him, and the rest is history with Triple H getting a big push after that, and obviously marrying Stephanie doesn't hurt either. But what do you think about Jeff not winning the WWF world title?
That was an Austin call probably, right? There was something there between them somewhere down the line. Remember, Austin worked Memphis, and he stopped at that. He's eating potatoes.
I know Jeff has talked about this before. He made some joke about the check saying, hey, if you stare at it any longer, it's not going to change the number. Something like that. And Austin never forgot.
Yeah, not a smart move.
When he returns in WCW in 99, so it'd be October 18th, 1999, he makes returns. So basically 2 years later, he attacks Buff Bagwell. He proclaims himself the chosen one of WCW. I know you're technically not there. This is the Vince Russo turn with the book. Was Russo the one that brought him back?
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
It was a good talent. You can't have too much good talent. So, yeah, I thought it was a good idea.
4/10/2000 Nitro kind of was like the rebranding and the rebirth, and then you had the New Blood and the Millionaires Club. But what did you think about him getting the push towards the world title as Spring Stampede 2000 rolls around and he beats DDP for the vacated title?
At this time, I was kind of out of the picture, but Jeff's a great talent and should be in the mix, that's for sure.
Do you see him as a world champion?
In the right situation, yes.
It felt like at that point he pretty much deserved it. Obviously, he's probably one of the better workers on the roster, but the booking wasn't great because he'll be basically four-time WCW champion in the span of like a year or so. Like, the moving around the title too much.
You don't move that belt around. You got to have a figurehead, and it's got to be somebody you believe in. If you pass the belt around, we're all even. I think four times in a year is way too much.
I feel like even if you want to make him like the big heel champion, or maybe even the chicken shit heel champion, or the Flair-esque champion where he cheats all the time, you should have had a long reign with it, especially with like the New Blood trying to take over to give him the long reign. But DDP wins it. David Arquette wins it. He wins it back. Flair wins it. Nash wins it. He wins it back. I mean, it was too many title changes.
You got it.
You think that he was an integral part of the Monday Night War?
He's one of the names you recognize.
Mm-hmm. Booking him, was it easy? Did he ever give you a problem?
No, never a problem. Easy.
WCW closes. They don't bring him because there's a little bit of controversy with the money owed to him from McMahon and Jim Ross and the controversy there. So McMahon publicly fires him on the last Nitro, and it wasn't a storyline. He kind of really was like, you're gone. Double G, double O, double N, double E, you're gone. And then he has basically nowhere to go. He starts up TNA and becomes ultra successful there. Were you ever, like, just surprised to see, like, wow, he started his own company?
No, I wasn't surprised at all because his dad was behind it, too. It was out of Nashville. That was a great idea.
Did you think they could compete with WWF, or you knew, like, it's kind of going to be a long shot, it's going to be tough?
I knew they couldn't compete, but they could be in the marketplace and could do well, but it's hard to compete against that machine.
So he's multiple-time NWA champion. He would become, you know, really like the face of the company for a while. And then behind the scenes, he was running creative and obviously running the company, promoting the company, putting his money behind the company. I mean, he kind of did every facet of the business. And then on top of that, he's on screen having great feuds with Kurt Angle and Sting and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. Pretty impressive, like, just to look at that and say, like, wow, you know, a lot of guys can talk about, oh, you know, I can run a promotion. He actually went out there and did it.
Yeah, you got to give him kudos for that. He did it.
And eventually, He became a producer for WWE, backstage agent. He's in great shape now. He's just wrestling for GCW. He's just getting inducted into the Hall of Fame in WWE in 2018. So obviously he was able to mend those fences with Vince working there and then getting inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yep, absolutely. Good for him. He deserved it.
He looks like he's getting ready for another run. I don't know where, but it just looks like he's getting ready for another run because he's slimmed down and his arms are looking to you. It just seems like he may be interested in wrestling again. I know he's 54, but Sting's a lot older than him. He's still wrestling, and Austin just wrestled. He's 57, so looks like he's ready to get back at it.
I hope so. I enjoy watching him.
Would you think he would ever start his own promotion again?
Anything's possible because he has connections in the TV world. Anything's possible.
Jeff Jarrett, definitely maybe undervalued, underappreciated, maybe underrated a little bit, because I always thought great worker, great hand. So everybody remembers him from the Monday Night Wars and kind of going back and forth, and I feel like that left a big impression on everybody as far as knowing that he was a star.
Yeah, I think you're right. Do you think the hat and the suspenders hurt him? Like, I believe that Kurt Hennig's outfit hurt him.
Yeah, I never quite got that. I guess it garnered some heat, but I never really cared for it. It didn't look like main event. When he came back to WCW and had the short trunks, like then he looked like a main eventer.
Right, right. But you had the stigma. It's like Henning had a great body, but he covered up with the
singlet.
Yeah, it just didn't look right. And Jeff always looked in great shape. I just didn't like that whole look.
Almost look like a male stripper, like that outfit.
I never thought about that, but you're right. You hit it right on the head.
It's a weird look, yeah. I know he's trying to go for like a cowboy thing, but yeah, it almost looks like cowboy meets stripper or something. It's weird.
Yeah.
Jeff is great. He's a great guy. I know him a little bit personally, or a lot of it, but very good guy. Great wrestler. Glad to see he's doing well. He's doing very good. You know, obviously he had some alcohol issues there for a little bit, but he cleaned himself up. He's doing great.
Good. I'm glad. He's a good guy.
What do you think is the legacy? Like, if you look back at Jeff Jarrett, what would you say?
Great performer. He accomplished anything he set his mind to. From wrestling to promotion to marketing to every other thing. I'm glad he did.
So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @2manpowertrip. Check out the website tmptempire.com. And you can follow Kevin on Instagram at @taskmastertalks. And, of course, go to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com, and go to the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
I'm going to be in Daytona Beach Sunday signing autographs at the Ocean Center, the site of the great Hogan turn many years ago when it became the third man of the NWO. So please come and see me, and all our friends that listen to John and I, come out and say hello.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.